John 15 talks about dealing with hatred. Jesus says, if the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I've chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Remember the words I spoke to you. No servant is greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obeyed my teaching, they will obey yours also. They will treat you this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would not be guilty of sin. Now, however, they have no excuse for their sin. He who hates me hates my Father as well. If I had not done among them what no one else did, they would not be guilty of sin. But now they have seen these miracles, and yet they have hated both me and my Father. But this is to fulfill what is written in their law. They hated me without reason. When the Counselor comes, whom I will send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth, who is out from the Father, he will testify about me. And you also must testify, for you have been with me from the beginning. So, Jesus spends some of his last words with his disciples talking about hatred. Someone whose life exemplified love talks about hatred right before he dies. Why'd he do that? Why talk about hatred? I think he wanted to prepare us for the facts of life.
Part of our life.
Yeah.
You know, that it is going to happen.
Yeah.
And how to deal with it.
Which is the first point. You will be hated. Accept that fact.
Especially in your own family.
Boy, isn't that true?
Well, I mean, by experience.
Yeah.
You know, for Christ, you know.
Right. Jesus said, I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. He said, from now on, mother will be divided against her daughter, father against the son, mother-in-law against the daughter-in-law, and a man's foes will be those of his own household. So, he said, you will be hated. I came right in on that note, you know. You will be hated. Accept that fact. We spend, you know, we run into opposition sometimes because of our personalities or because we get on people's nerves. Has anybody here got on somebody else's nerves?
I've had people get on my nerves.
Yeah.
That's
she ever got on any of you guys? Don't raise your hand, Dad. Cheryl's not here this morning. Alrighty. We have conflict because of our personalities, and we got our feelings hurt. Sometimes people just don't want to be around us. That's not what Jesus is talking about. Jesus is talking about hatred. Hatred, a definition that was given to me one time, which really hit home with me. Hatred is to will the non-existence of another. Hatred is to will the non-existence of another. So that I wish you had never been born stuff. That is hatred. Hatred is to will the non-existence of another. And someone just getting on your nerves or you just making somebody upset, that's not what he's talking about here. He says, people are going to hate you. They're going to wish that you weren't around. They're going to act like they wish you weren't around. They're going to talk like they wish you weren't around. They're going to treat you like they wish you weren't even around. Now, if this is a fact of life, then one of the obvious things is, don't be surprised when it happens. Hatred is such a violent emotion that when it manifests itself, it's easy to say, whoa, where did that come? What did I do? Why is this happening to me? Jesus says, go back to the owner's manual and read it. And the owner's manual says, this is a normal condition for this particular model. You know, you're that child of God model, and for that particular child of God model, it is normal for you to run into hatred. It's normal for people to hate you. Don't be surprised when it happens. People are going to hate you. So that's one of the first things that he tells us. The world hates you. Keep in mind that it hated me first. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I've chosen you out of the world. That's why the world hates you. So the second thing we need to realize is to remember the company you keep. Remember the company you keep. Jesus said, they hated me first. Jesus said, I was the first one that they hated. Just in time. So he says, remember the company that you keep. People are going to hate you. It is a fact of life. But he says, what you have to remember is that you are in good company. He says, I was the first one that hated. They hated me first. As you follow me in your life, in your generation, in your particular circumstances, in your surroundings, people will hate you. They hated me first. Jesus said, I was the first. And then he describes us as being not of, from, or part of the world system. And that's why, you know, we have to remember the company you keep is because we are not part of that company. We're not part of that company that is of the world. You know, we may dress alike. May go to the same place to work, may go to common places like a football game or basketball game. You may brush shoulders with people all the time, and you take a class photo and everybody's there smiling. They all just look so much the same in their uniforms or suits. But the point is, Jesus says there is at some point in that family photo a dividing line. And that dividing line is not of this world, and of the world. People whose hearts have never been turned over, whose wills have never been given to God. Remember the company you keep. That is one of your defenses. That is one of the things that you have to do in dealing with hatred, so it does not overwhelm you, so it doesn't surprise you, so it doesn't knock you off balance. Jesus said, remember, they hated me first. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. Avoid the lure or the trap of acceptance. Avoid the lure or the trap of acceptance. The world is always ready to come and put its arm around you and say, good job. And all you have to do is compromise just a little. It doesn't even have to be a lot, does it? It just has to be a little, because the world system is about compromise. The world system is about, there are no absolutes. The world system is about, do whatever pleases you. The world system is about, we're all in this together. Let's all just get along. Let's not rock the boat. Let's not do anything that would upset or offend anybody. And Jesus says, hey, that's the trap. That is the lure you're going to have to deal with, is a whole society pitted in its very existence against who you are. The whole society pitted against you. Everything that they do, the whole media conglomerate, entertainment, even political systems, it's set to pit you against them so that you will ultimately seek the world's acceptance, so that you will ultimately bend and say, yes, I'm part of it too. Even the educational system is all about conformity. It's all about, let's just not rock the boat. And Jesus says, here it is. If you want to be accepted, if you want to be part of it, then compromise and the world will put its arm around you. He says, but at the same time, as my follower, you can accept the fact that you will never be accepted. You never will be. Now, you can look at that one of two ways. For the person who is emotionally clinging and wanting that, it's painful to be told you will never be accepted by the world system. It isn't going to happen. Those people, not just a system, but those people with real names and real faces and real personalities are going to hate you. They'll never accept you. That can be a painful thing. The other way of looking at it, however, you don't have to be kept in that box. The other way of looking at it is to say, oh, well, now that I know that, I don't have to go seeking it. Now that I know that, I don't have to let that shake me. Now that I know that that is a fact, I don't have to run from that. I don't have to be shaken by it. So avoid the lure and the trap of acceptance. Realize you'll never be in. You'll never be in. Does the world try to get you in? Sure. I mean, we're social by nature. God created us that way. So sinners are social by nature, just like believers are social by nature, because that's the way God created us. Misery loves company, sin loves company, and righteousness loves company. You know why? Because we all love company. Except when our house is dirty. And even then, you might like a little bit of company. Anyway, We all love company. That's the way God made us. So the world's going to be trying to get you in, because the world wants that company and that association and that sense of belonging, just like we all do. It's just they're never really going to find the true sense of acceptance and belonging, because they're not finding it from the one who matters the most, which is God. But it's a big, powerful thing when you've got the whole world like this. And the little, you know, if you look at some of these nations where the Christian population is like 0.5% or less, or 1% or 2%, and everything else is Muslim or Hindu or whatever, that puts it in perspective, doesn't it? Those people in those situations deal with a whole lot more hatred than we do, although we do deal with it. It's not like we're hated any less. It's just a different, it's more of a subtle hatred in our society.
And the punishment is greater, too, than those other countries.
Yeah, sure. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. So part of why the world hates us, Jesus says, is a jealousy. They don't have what we've got. When you deal with stress and problems and trials, and you go through it with the joy of God and the peace of God and the love of God, and you just still maintain your balance that God has given you in life, the world will hate you because of that. The people you work with will hate you because of that. Because deep down they envy what you have. They're jealous because you have something they don't have. They don't know how to get it, for the most part. Most of them don't really know how to get it, even though we live in a country that's been saturated with all kind of religious symbolisms and tokens. There's just so many people that really don't know. How do I get what you got? I want it. I want it so bad I hate you because you got it and I don't. You wanted something, right? Yeah. They don't have what we've got, and because of that, they hate you. Just remember that that's part of it. Sometimes it isn't personal. You've got to remember that with people. Sometimes they hate you, but it's not personal. Does that make sense? You know, in another circumstance, in another place, in a different environment, you might get along okay. But in that environment, you are shining up a light, exposing their darkness. And what is within them causes them to hate you. And they may not even want to, and they may not even understand it, but they do. And it's because you have been chosen out of the world. Remember the words I spoke to you. No servant is greater than his master. Remember the ground rule. You are Jesus' disciple. That's the ground rule. You're Jesus' disciple. You are not the master. He's not the servant. He is the master. You're the disciple. And therefore, he says, read my story. Now, you know, none of this is perhaps profound, and it's certainly not new. It's been here all along, but he did speak this before he died. He died at the hands of jealous people. The Bible says that Pilate even knew that they had delivered him because of envy. They hated him because they were jealous of him. Because they didn't have what he had. So he says, remember the ground rule. You're my disciple. And if you're my disciple, don't expect anything more or different than what I got. Again, it's not maybe profound, but we've got to remember that. No servant is greater than his master. What about prosperity? What about peace? What about all those things? Yeah, there'll be some people come along and say, well, you know, this obviously conflicts and contradicts with the prosperity gospel because those are diametrically opposed to one another. Other people come along and say, people preaching peace and safety, you know, sudden destruction. Well, this is not confined to history since Jesus was alive. This is a fact of life since Cain and Abel. You know, this goes way, way, way back. It's a, it's an issue between righteousness and unrighteousness. All you have to do is just simply look at the people in the Bible and you'll see the conflict. I mean, Abraham had it. Joseph certainly had it from within his own household. David had it. Were those people blessed? Well, were they or weren't they? They were blessed. Do you think there were times when David had peace? Yeah, there were times when David had peace. Times when he would remember and his faith would grow strong, and then there were times when he was on the run from Saul. It's not that any of the promises of God become null and void simply because somebody hates you. They don't. Their hatred never nullifies the promises of God to you. It can't. Their hatred is not that strong. It's their hatred. It's the hatred of the world system. God is still bigger than their hatred or anybody else's hatred. It's just that they'll do everything they can to make it sour for you. They'll do everything they can to make it tough for you. Looking back at the passage of Scripture, and Nehemiah, when Sanballat, chapter 4, heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are?" Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What they're building, if even a fox climbed up on it, he'd break down their wall of stones." What did Nehemiah do? He said, "Hear us, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." So, you know, the story of Nehemiah is obviously full of that whole interchange back and forth between Sanballat, Tobiah, and Nehemiah. I mean, they ultimately tried to kill him. They tried to take him out because they realized if we take out the figurehead, then we're going to destroy the whole process. Did they? No, they didn't. Did it make their threats any less real to Nehemiah? How do you think he felt? Do you think he was over there saying, "Oh, water off the duck's back, not going to bother me"?
No. He thought enough of it to pray.
Yeah, he thought enough of it to pray. He knew it was real. There's something in that story we'll maybe get to it another time. We'll see. It didn't mean that the threats were any less real. It didn't mean that the hatred of those people were any less real. It didn't mean that it didn't cause him stress. It did. But it didn't stop the flow of God's grace in his life. It didn't stop him from completing what God had called him to do. It didn't prevent the wall from going up and the city from being restored. That's the thing to remember. It's hatred. It's real hatred. It's bitter and vile and terrible. But it doesn't stop the flow of God in your life if you remain in the vine, which is the key. If they obeyed my teaching, if they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obeyed my teaching, they will obey yours also. They will treat you this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would not be guilty of sin. Now, however, they have no excuse for their sin. He who hates me hates my Father as well. If I had not done among them what no one else did, they would not be guilty of sin. But now they have seen these miracles, and yet they hated both me and my Father. So Jesus says, another thing that we need to remember is that righteousness or a righteous life exposes the darkness around. Righteousness exposes the darkness around it. Now Jesus is putting this particularly in his context and says, if I had not come and spoken to them, they would not be guilty of sin. If I had not come and done among them what no one else did, they would not be guilty of sin. And in both cases he says, but because I said what I said and because I did what I did, they don't have any excuse. Guess what that means for you? The servant is not greater than his master. He says, as you follow me, you will speak righteous things because you're righteous. It'll come out of you because you're righteous to the core. He says, you'll speak righteously. What will come out of your lips will be things that are truth in hard situations. You'll speak the truth and no one else will. And he says, not only that, but you'll do things. You'll do righteous things. You'll do my works. You'll be merciful and kind. You'll be joyful and patient. You will, you know, even like we've talked about before, operating in the gifts of the Spirit, let the power of God flow through you into situations. Those bring lots of joy in every situation, right? I wish it were so. Only in a twisted world like this can you have a man who's crippled, you know, his entire life, and Jesus come along and heal him, and people be mad about it. But did it happen? Yeah, sure it did, on more than one occasion. Only in this kind of wicked world can you have somebody who's so broken emotionally and shattered because of their life and what's happened to them and the way people have treated them, that they come and they gingerly reach out and they're touching someone who's righteous, and people sitting around are despising them, saying, if he was a prophet, he'd know who and what manner of person she is who's touching him. But we live in that world. Jesus lived in it. You and I live in it. And Jesus says, okay, there's going to be joy for the people you touch. They're going to experience the power of God and the love of God and the forgiveness of God because it'll flow through you. But not everybody's going to like it. Not everybody is going to accept that. You will encounter real personal rejection and real anger and real hatred because you're going to do things that expose wickedness, and you're going to say things that expose wickedness. It comes with the territory. Don't be surprised. Just accept it. It's a fact of life. I'm going to stop here and ask, has anybody experienced this or dealt with this? You've dealt with it.
Even last week.
Even last week. How so?
Just when I was working and I snuck over for the weekend to see my brother at the hospital, and there's a lot of my family, you know, that's not saved or think that they're saved, but they really have never really read the Bible. And so every time I try to talk to them or whatever, this whole thing about hatred, I mean, they already hate me. They always, like, you know, when I walk in the room, they're like, oh, God, you know, they dread me coming. But, and it's not, because, that was a long time ago, but they still feel it in the heart. Even though they're not outwardly saying that, they still feel that way. So this weekend when I was there visiting my brother, there was, there's a person there that is, committing a sin, you know, that he's living in sin where, you know, the Bible says that's an abomination. So I was trying to witness because there's people there that were accepting it and, you know, whatever. And I was just praying to God to let me be a light because everyone around me was so dark. And I was, you know, said, you know, please put the words, you know, help me through this, because if I try to say something right away, they cut me off and they berate me. And, you know, it hurts so bad. But anyway, he allowed me to witness to a very important person. And I said, well, because they're Catholic, and they're believing in homosexuality. And I said, well, and she started yelling at me, saying, well, why don't you go to a priest and talk to him? I said, you know, that's a great idea. I said, the church has a Catholic church. I said, let's go talk to the priest. And I said, maybe you're right, maybe the Catholic doctrine
accepts homosexuality, you know, and then she was open to me, saying, okay, you know, like she was open to hear me. And then she said, well, she had left the room, so I got my Bible out right away, and I got all the scriptures of homosexuality in the Bible, and when she came back in the room, and I said, well, I said, listen, I said, you know, that's really good. Let's see if we can get down there and talk to that priest. And I said, well, let me share with you what my Bible says, what, you know, God's Bible, what the Word says. And I was able to read to her all the different scriptures. And because it's a study Bible, and the study Bible had told how, you know, the church should be a haven for people like that, and that we should hate the, you know,
yeah,
the practice, not that. And so it opened a whole other door for
yeah
her to understand, you know. And so, and that led into other things, you know, throughout the weekend. But it's still, you know, it's because I'm saved, you know, they, my own family, you know, they really want, you know, they want to, you know, accept this and compromise. But once you compromise, it leads into another and
yeah
into another. And
it always does.
So it's really hard for me because I love them so much. But yet I feel that hatred from them. You know, but I can't. I don't put it down their throats or anything like that at all. But I just try to live an example and pray, you know, for God to open those doors for me to continue to share with them, you know, the truth.
Anybody catch that when she said that? Hurt so bad. Did Jesus say anywhere through here, it'll only take a minute
and it won't hurt?
Has anybody ever told you that? This will not hurt. You are a liar. He didn't say that, did he? He didn't say, this will not hurt. I remember him weeping over Jerusalem. He wept over Jerusalem. He who had seen its history unfold and whose passion had been for that city wept over it because they are always rejecting God, rejecting Him. And that's what he ultimately says, is the point behind all of this hatred is that they hate my Father. And if they hate my Father, they're going to hate me. And if they hate me, they're going to hate you. So don't feel bad. You're in good company. But it doesn't mean it ain't going to hurt. It's going to hurt. They're going to hate you. It's going to be painful at times. And I appreciate you sharing it. I think that's a very significant point to remember, is that he didn't say anything about how you're supposed to feel or how you're going to feel. He's just telling you the facts, because sometimes just knowing the truth can help, even when it hurts. You know? All right.
Great. She was talking about, you know, she doesn't try to cram it down the throat. Just by walking in the room, Jesus said, you're the light.
Yeah.
She, even if she doesn't say a word,
yeah,
the light doesn't say, here I am. It just happens.
That's exactly
that's
right.
What, that's what Tony is.
That's exactly right. Because once you take a stand for righteousness, that line goes right down the middle there. So he didn't say how you're supposed to feel or not feel. I think another thing that he is telling us here that's kind of implicit is that the world is condemned. The world is condemned. He said, if I hadn't come and said what I said and done what I've done, they'd have an excuse. But he says now they don't have an excuse for their sin. So what does that tell us about the people that you're going to be around? It tells us that because of your presence, they know they're sinful. Because of your presence, they know they're wicked. They know that in the great scheme of God's big balance scales, that they come up short. Weighed and found wanting is what the handwriting on the wall was for the king. Weighed and found wanting. And every one of them knows I'm in God's big balances and I don't have what it takes. I don't measure up. So they already feel that way because of your presence. Now, does that mean you have a high and mighty attitude? No, you don't have to have a high and mighty. Did Jesus have a high and mighty attitude?
No, but people perceive
you. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Jesus didn't have a proud, discriminatory, self-righteous, holier-than-thou attitude. He was holier than they were. He was righteous. But the very fact that he was and they weren't put that perception there. And that's why you will encounter that as well. Well, who do you think you are? Where is that coming from? What did I say? What did I do? Nothing. Well, everything. You didn't do anything particularly to give them that perception. It's just what you did and what you said, which was righteous, and they weren't. So the world is condemned, which means that when you're around, they feel condemned. Like the old saying goes, some people bring life to a party by entering a room, and others when they leave it. I think with the case of the world, it's when you leave the room. Because they can go back to being themselves, being normal, and trying to avoid the realization that they're condemned. What you think about Mildred?
Just listening.
Anybody else got any comments or thoughts?
It's the things I think I've taken a stand for and always comment on, but I've never come out. That, look, you know, it's wrong to live together outside of marriage. My boss is living with her fiance. You know, two of the counselors are living with people. You know, everybody, and I've never said anything. And yet, this one new type, you know, that kind of friends at work, she had talked about the relationship she's in. She said, but we're not having sex. We haven't done that. And it was just like, I never said anything. And yet she feels the need to reassure me that they're not. And that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
It was like the things about, I made a point of saying, you know, can we ignore some of the things.
It's because it's a spiritual principle. Righteousness is a spiritual principle. Alrighty. Now they have seen these miracles, yet they have hated both me and my Father. But this is to fulfill what is written in their law. They hated me without reason. When the Counselor comes, whom I will send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth, who goes out from the Father, he will testify about me, and you must also testify, for you have been with me from the beginning. So Jesus sums up this passage where he's talking to his disciples before his death at the hands of wicked men. By saying, you must bear witness. He tells us you're going to be hated. You're to accept that fact. People are going to will the non-existence of you. We're not to be surprised when it happens. Remember the company you keep. Jesus was first. You're not greater than him. But ultimately, it takes us down to the point that he's making to them before his death. You must bear witness. You must bear witness of me. When push comes to shove, and the hatred seems to be so intense that you can't endure it, you must bear witness to the truth. And his warning in that is, it may cost you your life. Because he says, going to cost me my life. I'm headed out to lay it down right now. It may cost you your life, but just remember, when push comes to shove, you have to bear witness to the truth. You have to bear witness to the truth. I want to close this with a story about probably a lot of you have heard of Brother Andrew, the smuggler, God smuggler, who smuggles Bibles. You've heard of him. He smuggled Bibles.
Is it China?
And he started out in Russia, but he's done it in China as well. In fact, they did a big deal where they got like 1 million Bibles into China, and it was just a massive operation. It was, you know, would have made a drug smuggler envious. he was talking about a man who was imprisoned for his faith, and they treated him terribly. He had to clean out the... His job is to work in manure, basically. So that's what he did. And ultimately, with this particular person, they couldn't get him to recant. They couldn't get him to do anything that they wanted him to. And they were going to make a very big example of him. So they took him and put him on a pedestal. And they stood him on this pedestal with his arms shackled and a rope around his neck. And the whole point was, you stand. As long as you stand, you're alive. And then when you finally get tired, you're going to strangle yourself and die. And he stood there without food and without water for days. Days. And the guards watched him and mocked him. Everything intensely coming against him. And finally, he reached the point. There was a big storm starting to come in, and all this water was starting to pour on him, and he hadn't even had water. Hadn't even had anything to drink for days. And he's standing there, and he just reaches the point where he can no longer bear it. And he falls. And the next thing he knows, the guards are slapping him on the face and saying, "Come to, come to. Tell us about this God. Tell us about this God." And when he was standing on that platform and his knees gave way and he started to fall, a bolt of lightning came and split the rope that was holding him, and he fell completely free without dying. And it convinced the guards, "We want to know this God that you serve." It hurt so bad. That's where we live. But he bore witness of the truth. He was willing to do whatever it took because he knew the truth. It's like Peter said, "What do you want me to say? It's not real. Where can we go? You have the words of eternal life. If I say no to this, then there's nothing else for me out there. I've been there. I don't want to go back there. There's only this. And I can't deny it, never will deny it." So that is a call to us as well. It may never get as bad as that. It may get that bad or worse. But Jesus said, "It's not going to get any worse than I had it." Just remember that. You're in good company. You're in the company of me. You're in the company of the Father. And in Hebrews chapter 11, it says you're in the company of a whole arena who are standing around watching you, cheering you on, saying, "We made it. You can too." Be blessed.